Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Jean Adrienne. She is a... Well, I can find my notes here. Yes, she's a healer, a teacher, a lecturer, an author, and a creator of quantum change. She describes herself as a compassionate understanding healer. And what I'd like to do is to introduce Jean Adrienne. Welcome to the program, Jean.
Oh, Michael, I am so thrilled to be on your show. I have been following your work now for quite some time, and I love what you do for us and the messages that you bring out so regularly. So thank you so much. I'm just honored to be your guest.
It's kind of you to say so. Thank you very much. Now, I'd like to start the program with you by referring to your first book, Soul Adventures, because I think it would be nice for us to hear about your soul from its inception, which I gather is the story within the book I've just mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I wrote that book to heal myself. And, I guess most of the time when we start out to do something, we don't necessarily know why we're doing it. In fact, many times we start out to do things that are extremely important in our lives, thinking that we're doing it for a completely different reason. And I sat down at my computer one day and I just thought, wow, once upon a time there was a little girl who only wanted to be loved. And that was how it all started. And then my heart opened up, and I began to pour my story out. I had a fairly dysfunctional childhood, as most of us do, and I spent most of my years, in fact, up until I was in my 50s, wandering around on autopilot, completely unconscious of my role in the world and how I fit in with everything else. At age 50, I started waking up, and it's not surprising. I think the Native Americans feel that we don't become humans until we turn 51. So I guess I was right on target with that. But when I started waking up, I began to realize that there was so much more to life as we know it, than what I had thought previously. In fact, I began to learn that pretty much everything that I had ever believed maybe wasn't exactly what I thought it was. And that includes all of my thoughts about spirituality and reality and the universe as a whole. And all of that stuff, really came pouring out of me when I began writing the book. I mean, I would write a while and then I would cry for a couple of days. And I would write some more and then I would cry for a couple of days. And it was extremely cathartic and it needed to happen. But one of the things that I think has been interesting for me is the impact that that book has had on other people, because I can't tell you, the day doesn't go by that I don't get an email from someone who's bought the book and read it, and they tell me, oh, my God, I thought I was the only one, or reading your story helped me to understand something about my life or whatever. So, I'm really glad that I was guided to do that, and I got the book out, and I was halfway through it, I didn't realize that I was a channel as well. So I was halfway through the book when I opened a channel and began to receive what I guess is my life's work. No, I don't guess it. I know it is my life's work. This body of work called Inner Speak, which is a healing modality. So I had to put the book aside halfway through because my guides were basically putting me on full stop, and they said, you need to do this, and you need to do this now, please. And so I began channeling in this healing modality, not even realizing what it was. I didn't even have the presence of mind to ask, excuse me, but who's giving me this information? Because yeah. I was that naive. But I just knew that I had never felt so loved in my entire life as when I was sitting in front of my computer typing and receiving this information. And I did that for about 3 months, pretty much nonstop, taking times to eat and go to the bathroom and sleep at night, but that was pretty much it. And I would sit there at the computer, and what I realize now is that when I am channeling, the tears flow, because it feels so wonderful, and to be speaking to spirit. And at that time, I didn't even, like I said, I didn't know who it was that I was talking to. Comes to find out, many years later, I actually figured it out, through the help of my mentor, Steve Rother, that I was channeling the group, the same group of angels that he channels, on lightworker.com. And, then it began to make sense at that point. But, once I got InterSpeak in, then I was able to finish my book. So that's pretty much the story of Soul Adventures. And not only is it my story, but it's also the lessons I learned along the way. And because the InterSpeak work came in the middle of it, then it also has information about past lives that I uncovered through doing this work, as well as some ancestral wounds that I brought in this lifetime, which, again, I uncovered through doing the InterSpeak work. So it's sort of all wrapped up into one fairly neat package. And that's really what the book's about. And so it's a healing book.
Mm. So where you refer to past lifetimes, do you find a link between them that would logically have led you to where you are now and what you're doing?
Well, you know, hindsight being 2020, yeah, I have to say, yes, I do. But when all of this started, Michael, I didn't even believe in past lives. I was raised in a very fundamentalist Christian family in the southern part of the United States, the Bible Belt. And we don't talk about such stuff down here, you know? So, I didn't really, understand, nor it wasn't part of my belief system. In fact, you know, I would, go to a meeting or something and somebody would turn to me and they would say, "Hey, have you read this book, Many Lives, Many Masters? It's about past lives." And I would say, "Well, no, I don't believe in that stuff." You know, and so it really wasn't until, spirit sort of caught me beside the head with a 2x4 that I woke up to the fact that, wow, you know, all there is right here and right now, but there are so many flavors of it. Because it, quite frankly, in the years since, it's been about, I don't know, 11, 12 years since all this happened, that I've come to believe that there is no such thing as time. And so it's possible that these things that I call past lives are all happening at the same time, but just maybe in another dimension. Because it's so easy to clear the issues up from another lifetime. That's why I think it's got to all be happening now. When someone is in a session with me, you know, and it comes up that whatever's blocking their life happened in another lifetime, that aspect of themselves is right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's clear as a hand in front of my face to me, and usually to the client as well, whether they're psychic or not, doesn't matter. Because these pieces all want to fall into place. I think that the universe and spirit wants homeostasis. It wants healing. It wants everything to be as it was originally intended. And so it assists us in letting this stuff go. It helps us to find the pieces. But, you know, what I do find is that in many lifetimes, I abused my gifts. I abused my power, as we all have. And, so when you want to know about, you know, A, connecting to B, connecting to C, it does make logical sense.
Hmm. What you're doing now is quite varied in the sense, although it fits in well with what your objective is. I mean, you've gone into healing, you've gone into past lives, into this modality that you call InterSpeak. I couldn't help thinking that perhaps as you've experienced in previous lives somewhere down the line, you've been actually building up the background and maybe even already the gifts to enable you to do it. In other words, did you have much to learn in this lifetime to take it all up?
You know, I have to agree with you completely. Because as time has gone on, through meditation and through channeling, I've actually got now lucid memories of some of the, I think, critical, important lifetimes where I did learn a lot of these skills. For example, when I began to receive the Inner Speak modality, what I was told was that it was based on sacred geometry. And, you know, I turned this, you know, like, what? Look to my guides, and I said, whoa, you're talking to a woman who can't balance a checkbook or add two and two together and make it come out to be four twice in a row, and you're bringing me something to do with mathematics? Hello? You must have the wrong person here. And I was told, no, keep typing. And over time, I've begun to realize that absolutely it all falls into place. And it all ties back to skills that I learned early on in the path of my soul. Mm-hmm. And so I don't ask questions about that kind of stuff anymore. You know, in the beginning, I would tell you, I don't know how this works. Now I will tell you that absolutely it works because we live in a universe that's governed by mathematics.
Yes,
and I just, you know.
I agree. I mean, everything is orderly and functions in a way that I guess we don't truly understand. Perhaps we haven't even got the ability when we're at this sort of lower level of vibration. Certainly, there doesn't appear to be anything that happens by chance. Now, where did you pick up the idea of your inner speak? And what is it, in fact?
Well, what it is a protocol. It's 144 files of information, and each one of those files contains 36 pieces of information, and the pieces of information are sentences or words or phrases, and it almost works kind of like, I'm sure you've seen on television, where they teach gorillas how to communicate at the zoo by presenting them with a big board that has pictures on it, and the gorilla will point to particular pictures, and in that way they're able to communicate with the trainer. Well, how InnerSpeak works is very similar to that, because our higher self, our soul, is talking to us constantly, nonstop. There's a direct communication there. Unfortunately, we don't know the language. If we did know the language, we would be in alignment with our higher self constantly, and we would do everything that our higher self suggested that we do, and we would live in heaven on earth. We would have everything we desire. We would be able to manifest instantly. You know, there'd be no disease. There would be no war. There would be no famine. There would be nothing except for peace, love, and happiness. So anyway, right. Michael, we were talking about what happens in an InnerSpeak session, and basically it's a healing story that tells you where you set up your own blocks, because we are the creators. Nobody messes in our life except for us, and that's very hard for a lot of people to figure out, but you know, once we do figure that out, then we're able to let it all go. And in the course of a session, and for the majority of the clients that I work with, it takes a single session to shift their energy to the point where they're able to move forward free of whatever was holding them back. Mm. So it works at a very deep level, and it's fairly fast. It's also very gentle. And I also was very naive when I was channeling this, in that I didn't realize you don't argue with spirit. So I did, of course. And basically what I said was, that I've dealt with enough energy work in my lifetime that's created drama, trauma, and pain for me. And if this is going to do that, I'm not your girl. Go find somebody else. And so we cut a deal, if you will, such that InnerSpeak will take a client up to the point where if we did one more thing, we would throw them into a healing crisis. And at that point, it says, okay, here you need to stop and you need to let the client process this. And then you can finish it up. That's the only time I ever suggest a person have more than one session with me.
Right. So this inner speak is in itself the healing method. When you talk of healing, it isn't healing in perhaps a more recognized way. You're healing the whole person.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's at the body, mind, spirit level. And, you know, and it does affect physical healing. If that's what the person, if it's playing out in their physical body, whatever their issue is, because I believe that, that all dis-ease, you know, it starts at the spiritual level and the emotional level first, and the last place it plays out is in the physical. So it does happen there as well.
Right, yes, indeed. Give our listeners one example of a past life that you've come across that has, say, seriously affected a person's present life.
Okay. So I'm just going to, I'll use an example of a client session that I did last week, just because it's very present in my mind. But it's a lifetime where this person was in a relationship, and they were in a marriage. And they were forced out of that relationship by family pressures because, you know, the family didn't approve of the person that they had chosen. The person wasn't good enough for their daughter, was the example. And the daughter did not feel that she had the ability to stand up to her parents and say, no, but I love this man and this is, you know, we're supposed to be together and whatever. It's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet scenario, if you want, except that they didn't end up killing each other. Actually, perhaps worse, because of her inability to speak up and, you know, stand up for herself, in a past lifetime, she's been dealing with relationship issues over and over and over again. I don't know how many lifetimes, but the lifetime that we were dealing with went back to, I think, the 1700s. So I would warrant that she's dealt with this more than once since then. And it's affected her ability to speak her truth, to actually even be in touch with her feelings. You know, so she, you know, in this lifetime, she's not able to hold her own in a relationship. She tends to lose herself and not even realize that she's done it. She tends to settle for less than what she really wants in a relationship for fear of being alone, you know, on and on and on. But in order to be able to heal this burden, she had to go back to this time in the 1700s and stand up for herself, forgive her parents, forgive her lover, husband, whatever he was, and forgive herself. The work had to be done where and when it actually occurred. That's a place, I think, where we end up falling apart with a lot of traditional methods of therapy today, is that we don't realize that we've got to go back to the place where we started the problem and fix it there. Issues that we create on the earth plane have to be cleared on the earth plane. And what happens is we come back again, you know, over and over again to try to heal them. But when we come back, we don't remember why we came back, you know, that veil drops. And so we muddle through life. And if we're lucky, we meet up with the situations that will enable us to clear. And if we're not, we screw it up and we get to come back again. And it's all perfect. It, you know, it all is what it is. But so that's kind of an example. You know, we don't usually understand, and it doesn't really matter whether somebody believes in a past life or not, because I will tell you that if they don't believe in a past life, it will not come up in an inner speak session. The higher self is very crafty in how it presents our issues to us for healing, and it will present the issues to us in the way that we are able to get it. You know, we are so unconditionally loved by spirit and by our higher selves that, you know, the goal is for us to be happy, to live in peace and joy. So if you don't believe in past lives, then whatever the issue is that needs to be healed will be presented in an InterSpeak session to you in a way you can handle it. It'll come up as something that's happened to you in this lifetime, or it will come up as something that you inherited from an ancestor and you have it in your DNA, so that you can clear it and clear it in a way that you can accept. I have a theory about all healing, and I think that there are four things that have to happen in order for healings and clearings to take place. The first is somebody's got to ask for it. It's got to be requested. The second thing is that the person requesting the healing has to participate in the clearing. And the third thing is it will happen at that person's level of consciousness or level of belief, no more, no less. So, for example, if you don't believe in a past life, you won't be healed in a past life. You'll be healed in another way. And then the final thing is, I believe that it's gratitude that actually seals the deal. That many times when I'm working with a client, nothing actually shifts until the very end of the session when I tell them, okay, it's time for you to give thanks. And they do that, and then all of a sudden, voila, everything shifts.
Right. Have you ever found any evidence that when someone comes into this lifetime with a view to clearing up some sort of problem that relates to a relationship, that they are actually in this life in partnership with the same person?
Yes, absolutely. I believe that we travel in fairly closely knit soul circles. And I'm pretty sure there's a finite number. I don't know what that number is, but I'm guessing that it's a fairly small number. Let's just say it's 144, because that's a nice sacred geometry number. So, we will come, we'll do lifetime after lifetime with the same people, and we will have relationship issues that we have to heal. So, yeah, we will absolutely come in together with them. I'm going to use myself as an example on this one. This came up in an InterSpeak session, and I didn't believe it. But I was doing a session. I was having a pretty significant relationship issue with my ex-husband. Our relationship was beginning to fall apart. And I was working on myself and doing an InterSpeak session. And it came up that the issue that I was dealing with went back to an ancestor, but it was an ancestor who had reincarnated. So they were actually alive on the earth plane right now. So I started asking questions. So, was this ancestor male? Yeah. Was this ancestor on my mother's side of the family? No. So, on your father's side of the family? Yes. Is it more than five generations back? No. And then it got down to, it was my grandfather on my father's side, was reincarnated. He was on the earth plane right now, but he was the creator of the issue that I was dealing with. So, then I started asking questions about, okay, well, so, who is this man now? And what I was told was, well, guess what? It's you. And I thought, well, that's not possible. My grandfather died 6 years before I was born, so I guess theoretically it could have been possible, but I didn't buy it. So I searched out and found the best, most highly recommended past life regression therapist that did hypnotherapy in Atlanta. And I made an appointment with her. I didn't tell her why. I just showed up, and I said, I want to be taken back to my last lifetime. I want to know who I was before I came here. And so she regressed me, and the funny thing was that in between the 6 years before my death when my grandfather died and now, I actually had another life. What I saw was, when she took me back, I saw a room with very bright lights. I was all alone, and I was in one of those glass containers where they put newborn babies, when they're born. And I was just there by myself. There was no other human being in the room. I looked around. I had no judgment at all. And I looked around. I thought, well, isn't this nice? I'm out of here. Bye. And I was dead. And that was my most recent lifetime to the one that I'm in now. And so then she says, well, now I'm going to take you back to your deathbed on the lifetime before that. And when she did that, I saw my aunts and my uncles. I saw my father standing around. There were sidebar conversations going on in the back of the room, and I could hear the people talking about me. and I'm laying in the bed as my grandfather dying of cancer.
Well, I never.
And I was like, oh, my God. And I learned some information in that I did not know before. And luckily, at that point, one of my aunts was still alive. And so I went down to Tallahassee, Florida, which is where I'm from, and I went down and just kind of went down to say hello to Aunt Opal, basically. I did not tell her why I was coming, but I sort of asked some leading questions, and I was able to verify the information that I learned in that. And that is what sealed the deal for me on reincarnation.
Yes.
So I got the tangible proof that I needed.
Absolutely, yes. You couldn't do much better than that.
No, but you know what? In that lifetime, I was an alcoholic. I was living a life lesson of not being able to communicate from my heart. I wasn't accountable. I wasn't responsible. I wasn't very nice to my kids. And so I came in this lifetime, born to a man who was my second oldest son that I had serious relationship issues with in that lifetime. And guess what? I had serious relationship issues with my father in this lifetime. So that's probably a better example for you, the question you asked me earlier.
Right.
You know, and my dad, his biggest problem was being able to communicate from the heart. He really was never able to tell me and or show me that he loved me while he was alive.
Yeah.
And I just wish I had found this work, you know, before.
I wonder why it is that people find it difficult to use expressions to show their love for someone else. I mean, what is the difficulty?
I think it's one of the primary life lessons that that we come here to experience. Because I believe that this whole life on Earth is a game, you know, that we come here to experience aspects of soul that we can't experience at home. You know, because home is a place of pure love where we're completely connected to source.
Yes.
And so I think that we come here to experience lack of love. And what better way to do that than to choose a parent or both parents in some cases, who can't show you love the way you think you should be loved. And a lot of times if we don't choose it with our parents, we'll choose it with our mates. You know, and we end up having relationships there. It's all about, you know, learning all those aspects of love.
Mm. That's interesting because neither of my parents could express themselves in that way. And in fact, they even found it difficult to express themselves physically. I think in my family, my parents were never ones for hugging the children, and I had a younger brother and sister, so... I guess the choice of parents there then was certainly for some reason that I haven't worked out yet.
Yeah, well, you know, the bottom line, I think, for each of us is to wake up to the fact that we can't find that love outside ourselves, you know, that it's always within and we're never alone. And so we set up all of these interesting tests or pop quizzes for ourselves where we believe that we aren't being loved. You know, we choose these catalysts to invoke our life lessons, and it all plays out, you know, and if we're lucky, then maybe we do figure it out. And if not, there's always other chances. I think that's the sad thing. Is for people who don't believe in reincarnation to think they only get one shot at it, you know?
Right.
Because I believe our souls are extremely old, you know, that we've all been around the block more often than not, and maybe whether we do it in linear time or whether we do it in other dimensions, I don't think it really matters, but I can't imagine that my higher power, God, source, whatever you want to call it, would be short-sighted enough to only give us one shot.
Absolutely. Just now, you mentioned about ancestral karmic debt, and you also mentioned in that connection with it being in the DNA. Now, unless those that ancestral debt was actually something to do with yourself, have you worked out why we in this lifetime, say, should carry that type of debt with us?
Well, I believe that our DNA is part of the repository of everything that's ever happened. So I think it's all there, you know. I don't believe science has or maybe ever will have a comprehension of how intense and how in-depth our DNA is. I believe that not only is our DNA more than just two strands, but I think that there are 144 strands that I'm aware of. But I also think our DNA is multidimensional. So it holds way much more than just the color of our eyes, the color of our hair. In fact, the latest work that I've been doing relates to DNA in specific. I've actually been working with a fairly new team of guides that they call themselves the Energies of Now, and they tell me that they've never actually worked, you know, on Earth before, but that enough of us sort of raised our hands and said we really would like some assistance in this ascension process, and they listened and they came, and they're here no different than Seleuca, but they're here to assist us through this process. And so they told me that at one point we had 144 strands of DNA, and associated with each of these DNA strands was an attribute of what they called Christ consciousness. And that somewhere along the way, and I'm not really clear on what happened, but somewhere along the way, we lost 142 of those strands. I don't necessarily believe they were taken away from us, as some people suggest, but we just maybe misplaced them. And maybe I'm a Pollyanna here. It doesn't matter. But anyway, they're still available to us in one of our dimensional aspects or one of our energetic bodies. And it's up to us to locate those strands of DNA, to reintegrate them within our wholeness, and to activate those aspects of Christ consciousness for ourselves. And so these beings have now told me that I should draw glyphs or pictures that represented the frequency of each of these 142 strands of DNA. And, of course, I went off arguing with Spirit again and said, I don't know how to draw. And they said, sure you can. We'll show you how. So within the course of about 3 months, I channeled in 142 of these energetic pictures and was given the Christ consciousness attribute associated with those. I'm having those made into a deck of cards even as we speak. I expect to have those in my hands around the second week of June, because they're being printed now, so that people can take these cards and they can meditate on the card and activate the DNA strand and activate the attribute of consciousness. Or one of the things I suggest is they take, you know, work one card at a time, put it in a Ziploc bag, set a glass or a bottle of water on top of it, let the energies go into the water and drink it in and take it into your body. You know, there's more than one way to do it. You know, there's many ways to do it.
Could even be more fun if you used a bottle of wine, I suppose.
I think so. I like that idea. You and I are singing from the same page in the hymn book. You know, it's whatever it takes, because at this point, I believe in this point in our consciousness, we can do anything that we want to do by using our attention and our intention. And there's nothing that is beyond our abilities as the creators of our own reality.
Indeed.
We just have to get to the place to step up to that, you know?
Yes. I think, well, indeed, Spirit tells us so often that we are much more powerful than what we think, and even our thoughts can eventually manifest realities. So, and I think as our levels of consciousness are rising, So our abilities to be creative are also increasing. So maybe we have to be more careful now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I mean, I'm finding that I am manifesting my thoughts sometimes before I'm even done thinking them. You know, and that goes for the good, the bad, and the ugly. I mean, literally, I was thinking not too long ago, I've got this orchid plant that I've had forever, and I haven't, you know, taken really good care of it. I will admit, people have told me you need to give it orchid food, and I didn't have any. And finally, one day after it bloomed, I thought, wow, you know, it's really beautiful, and it's been really good for me, and I haven't been really responsible for it. I need to go buy myself some orchid food. And I went downstairs, and as I was going to get in my car, I just noticed that sitting on the workbench, my partner's workbench, was a jar of orchid food. And I brought it in and later, and I asked him, I said, Randy, where'd this come from? And he said, oh, it came from Julia. She noticed that you had an orchid in the kitchen window, and she's actually leaving the country. And she said, you know, give this to Jean because she needs to be feeding her orchid. I manifested it just that fast.
Mm.
You know, so if we can do the positive stuff that fast, if we're not really careful about what we're thinking, we absolutely will bring our own worst nightmares. The time lag that used to protect us from our negative thoughts isn't really there anymore.
Mm.
So we've got to be very judicious with what we think.
And of course, there is in constant use, if you like, the law of attraction. Whatever we focus on, we eventually attract to ourselves anyway.
Absolutely.
So, I'm saying, beware.
Exactly. Well, you know, for many years I've journaled, it's the first thing I do every morning. I sit down and I have my coffee and then I start writing in my journal. And for a long time, I let my journal be kind of like a bitch session. And I would unload into my journal all the stuff that had happened the day before that had irritated me or that I didn't like, or, you know, I'd complain about this, that, or the other person or situation. And, you know, and then I just wasn't clear on why I kept having issues, you know. And finally, one day, I was like, oh, my God. Look at what I'm saying. I am spewing out all of this vile stuff, and I'm really giving it form because not only am I thinking it, but I'm writing it. And so I changed at that point, and I started being very careful about what I write in my journal, and I do keep it very positive.
Yes, I can believe that. Other people might not, of course, because humans have a habit of complaining, and complaints are usually obviously about things they don't like, whether it's people or whatever, and then they can't understand why they attract more of the same. It's quite funny in another way.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you know, and I had a wonderful woman actually is who woke me up. I don't even really remember how I came across this woman. Her name is Jacqueline Aldana, and she created a process that she called the 15-Minute Miracle. And I bought her book, The 15-Minute Miracle. And really what it is it's a method, it's a fill-in-the-blank journaling method for conscious creation. And she really sort of broke the code on what's the best way to write down the things that you want to create in your life so that you're doing it in alignment with the universal laws. And when I began doing her process, that was what woke me up to the fact of, wow, look what I've created for myself over the last 3 or 4 years with all the, you know, vile spewing I'd done in my journal. You know, and I got to tell you, her methodology really works. So highly recommend her work.
Indeed, yeah. Now, you've spoken about soul adventures and you're saying that your heroine in it finally finds the unconditional love. Now, when we get to know about spiritual paths, we realize that that is what we should be aiming for. But in this level of duality and all the problems we have, that can sometimes be very difficult to achieve. What have you got to say about that?
Well, it's a moving target, is exactly what I'll have to say about that. Because, you know, when I wrote that book many years ago, one of the chapters in there was called The Soulmate. Because, you know, I finally, after all these years of struggle and working on, you know, raising my consciousness and striving for enlightenment and all this kind of stuff, I finally did meet someone who was able to show me the love in the way that I wanted to be shown. But I will tell you that that relationship only lasted 14 years. I continued to grow, and I continued to change, and my husband didn't. And so I think that that it's a moving target. The more we learn to love ourselves, and the higher we raise our consciousness, the more things will continue to change. And I think one of the biggest disservices that we do to ourselves is that we put, we put God in a box. You know, we find something and we think it's really good, and we put a frame around it, and, you know, we hang it on the wall, and we go, voila, this is wonderful. But yes, when we do that, we then lock in the creative force and make it not be able to create outside that box. And so what happens is, if we constantly then are expanding our consciousness, then we do move our God outside the box, and we open up ourselves to greater possibilities. So, you know, is there a perfect love for all time? I would have to say that the only place that would exist would be within ourselves. We will never find it, you know, in someone else.
Well, I'm guessing that if you can reach that state of unconditional love, you love everybody and everything. And if other people were at the same level, you would all be within the one love. So without talking about human love, which you're not... can often be very personal and not apply to anyone else, I could see that as a distinct possibility. But I can also understand what you've just said, that you met this person who achieved that level, but because you were still changing, at least this is how I interpret what you said, you actually sort of went in a different direction for a time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I like how you've summed that up, in that when we all do get to that place where we completely remember home, where love is unconditional, then we remember that we are all one. And in fact, I do believe that we are.
Indeed. Now, your book, Inner Speak Soul Adventures, mentions about children of the new earth, I gather, parenting the crystal child.
Yeah.
What do you know about the crystal child?
I thought it was really interesting when I was waked up at 2 o'clock in the morning and told to write about parenting the crystal child. And I said, excuse me, but, you know, my kids are in their 30s. What do I know? And they told me just to write, that they would tell me what I needed to know. And then pretty soon after that, my son, you know, and his wife gave birth to one, and then they gave birth to yet another one. So I guess it was pretty important that I was getting in tune with that, because I didn't realize that I was fixing to become a grandmother of one of these kids, actually two of them. But, you know, we are giving rise to a new species on planet Earth.
And
we're evolving, and these new kids that are coming in today are really, really special. They're so connected in with that oneness, that unconditional love place, which is, you know, it's not without its difficulties for these kids, because they come in wide open, They come in with their hearts open. They come in with no judgment, no fear, no guilt. And they're thrust into a 3D reality where this stuff is all around them. Mm. And so it makes for sort of a difficult reentry for these kids. I fully believe that, you know, that sort of as we ended or as we birthed in the tail end of the carbon-based species, the indigo kids, that we were trying to prepare a place for these new kids to come in where they could be safe. You know, and so I think that the kids who really had the hard road to walk were the ones that, you know, they're teenagers and young adults now. And they've really had a hard time trying to fit into this in-between space, 3D reality versus 5D reality. But these new kids are very special. And they're, at some point in time, I think that science will actually acknowledge that they're genetically different. But I don't think they figured that out yet. They're very sensitive to the environment. They're very sensitive to toxins and food additives, and many of them are late to speak because they don't have to speak because they communicate telepathically. And so what's happened is that we've got a bunch of medical doctors that run around trying to judge them as broken because they're late talking. And so they want to put them, you know, in some sort of a diagnosis. When in fact, many of them, whenever they get ready to talk, they start speaking in complete sentences, you know, because they could have all along, you know. Mm. My youngest granddaughter, who's 5 now, did not speak until she was almost 3. She got everything she wanted by going, eh, eh, you know, hollering and pointing and this, that, and the other. She didn't need to talk. And then when she started talking, she began with a vocabulary probably of a high school kid. And it was really amazing. And we just, and she lives, this is really funny, she lives in Orlando, Florida, in the heart of the Deep South, and she speaks with a Brooklyn accent.
Really?
As soon as she started talking, you know, she might as well be speaking with a British accent. There's nobody that she's been around that, you know, that comes from Brooklyn or, you know, New York or whatever. You know, she's never been exposed to that, never seen it, never heard it, and opens her mouth speaking in complete sentences with a Brooklyn accent. Now, you tell me that's not a past life thing?
Oh, I agree. If people are observant like that, they can pick up these interesting bits of information. Because I'll tell you very briefly that when my younger son was born, he had lots of mannerisms of someone who'd just come from a life in India. He used to sit around in the lotus position, and he had a great fear of snakes. He nearly fainted the first time he saw a toy one. And there were other things that happened, and I thought, oh, yes, you've definitely come from an Indian incarnation. And when he grew up and got married and did his own thing, his house was decorated in a typical way that you'd see an Indian one, where all the colors were bright, and there was bright reds and greens, and he had carpets hanging off the wall. I mean, it was just amazing.
I love it, yeah. Yeah, you know, and so many times these new kids are coming in with a very, very thin veil. And as long as we don't shut them down and tell them it's not okay. I was talking to a friend this morning, and she's a mother of a crystal child. And this child communicates with gnats. And you know, she knows which one's which. And unfortunately, gnats have a very short lifespan, you know, but she's always like surrounded with gnats. And she's connected in, I think, to the soul of the species, because I don't believe individual gnats or bugs have souls. But I believe that the species probably does. And, you know, she's doing some interesting work, you know, with the morphic group of gnats. And her mother's just baffled by it. And I'm like, you know, just support her, you know, let her be with it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes, I think you're right there that certainly groups of wild animals have a group soul, and I understand that when they become domesticated, then they become more individual. Now, Jean, we're having such a good time here, even though we had a slight hiccup with the break. We haven't got
too
many.
Well, Mercury is retrograde still.
Oh, is it? Oh, that's what it is then. We're blaming Mercury.
Yeah, why not?
I would like you to have a couple of minutes here to tell our listeners your website address and where your book is available from.
Absolutely. So my website is www.jeanadrienne.com. And both of my books, Soul Adventures and Reframe Your World, are available there. They're also available on Amazon.com and in a lot of local metaphysical bookstores. And the Reframe Your World book has been translated into Dutch. So it's available, in Holland and Belgium in a Dutch version. The InnerSpeak cards are available only on my website at this point, but I'm having them reprinted. They're in their third printing, and when they come back, they'll actually be available in metaphysical bookstores and Amazon.com, along with these new DNA glyphs, which will be called Reconnecting Soul. But that will be in June of this year. The InnerSpeak cards also are available online, and that's a free gift. All people have to do is go on my website and sign up for my newsletter, and I'll give them a link so that they can use the InnerSpeak cards to do clearings for themselves, and there's no charge for that. They're in 7 languages. They're in French, Dutch, Russian, German, Spanish, English, and Turkish.
Right. Now, You also have your own internet radio show, I gather. Is that the address Voice of America?
Actually, no. I've moved my show from Voice America to awakeningzone.com, and that is every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock. This is a brand-new network. Started in January. It was created by Jeffrey Hoppe, who channeled Tobias and channels Adam of St. Germain now. It's every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock.
Right. Just talking again about channeling, since you do receive information from your guides, do you ever put that into print, or is it more of a personal nature?
Other than the fact that InnerSpeak, is channeled, I'm beginning to step out more, and I blog that information. The link to my blog is on my homepage of my website. I'm actually becoming a little bit braver with that. For many years I kind of shied back from that. I just wanted to say, well, channeling is something that people like Michael Quincy do and Lee Carroll and Steve Rother, and I'm really not good enough to do that. I'm getting braver. You'll be seeing more from me in print. It's more in a blog information. And I have to say that pretty much everything I've ever written really is channeled. Certainly Reframe Your World. When I went back and read that, I was like, wow, I don't remember writing this.
Right. It's been very, very interesting and very nice to talk to you, Jean. I'll have to leave you here now. I've got a minute or so, I think, to introduce my guest for next week. So thank you very much for coming on.
I've thoroughly
enjoyed talking to you. Thanks a lot.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Jean. Right, my friends. Yet another very interesting guest. Next week I have Georgios Tsoukalos, who is a TV specialist. He appears on the Ancient Astronaut series. He's been a guest on the BBC as well. And he is something of an expert on UFOs and ancient alien contacts. So I'm looking forward to having a very good program with him. So I hope you can join me then, and thank you for joining me today. God bless you all. Thank you.